Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Big Chief with a badge, a cattle prod and a head on a stick.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. On the day you might be forgiven for thinking that the world has officially gone mad. We're all doomed, apparently, according to several leading lights of modern society, including Jeremy Hunt, who seems to think that he wants to get out of Europe on the 31st of October, but he's not entirely sure if it's actually going to happen. According to David Attenborough, or Sir David Attenborough if you prefer, he appeared before the Climate Change Committee yesterday like some kind of 21st century Joan of Arc, warning of the dire consequences of going on holiday and driving cars to work. And he reckons attitudes to climate change are easily likened to the bad old days of slavery. Is the sainted one losing his marbles? He actually did admit, and you will hear him saying it on this very show, that he doesn't know what the future holds. But there's no point in pretending that we can't do anything about it. We have to believe that we can do something about it, which is not exactly the same as taxing the bejesus out of everybody in order to make sure that the climate is indeed saved. Of course, the chairman of the Climate Change Committee is no slouch either. He is Lord Deben, formerly Tory Cabinet Minister John Selwyn Gummer. He runs a whole series of eco-businesses, including the Sancroft International Consultancy on Sustainability, recycling company Valpak, Globe International, and one or two other climate-based charities. Marvellous, isn't it? He's making a very good living out of telling us all how to live and how we should be driving around in what sort of cars and what sort of holidays we should be taking. He reckons we need to drastically change our behaviour in the next year to save the planet. Would you please give me a small break? 0344 499 1000. Loads of you are in agreement with me on this, and I want to hear from all of you throughout the course of this show. Meanwhile, we've got a taste of what Prime Minister Boris Johnson would actually be like last night on the ITV debate. He clearly loves it when the audience is on his side. He gets quite carried away when they give him a bit of applause, which they mostly did give to him rather than to Jeremy Hunt. And he'd obviously rather be poking fun than answering real questions, but he definitely gets my vote after 3 years of Theresa May. I'd except Bozo the Clown, or Coco the Clown in his position. 0344 499 1000. Meanwhile, our tennis players seem to be getting a bit uppity, don't they? Don't like being asked the wrong kind of questions? Well, I've got some advice for Joe Konta. Do a bit more practicing next time, and maybe nobody will be asking you any awkward questions when you get to the final. Coming up, we'll also be finding out why goats are more emotional than you think they are, and why public schools aren't as good as everybody thought. Plus, we'll be chatting to LaDonna Harvey in San Diego as well. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Loads of you have got an awful lot to say about David Attenborough, Sir David Attenborough, in his appearance yesterday before the Climate Change Committee, which is run by formerly the Tory Cabinet Minister who shoved a hamburger down the front of his daughter's face, basically trying to prove that CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and mad cow disease were not in any way harmful to the general public. He now runs a whole series of climate-based charities. He also runs a whole series values of climate-based businesses. He's probably making a fair amount of money out of this climate change nonsense. And he says that we need to change very, very rapidly the way that we behave in order to save the planet. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not buying it, but we'll get into that a little bit later on. Instead, let's talk about Boris Johnson. Let's talk about Jeremy Hunt. Let's talk about the debate last night with Chris Philp, Conservative MP for Croydon South. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
What did you make of it last night? I thought it was quite entertaining, to be honest.
Well, it certainly was. And, you know, I think in particular, Boris was positive, energetic and quite dynamic. So yeah, I thought it made for quite good TV.
Yeah, I don't think Jeremy Hunt came out of it terribly well. I mean, amazingly, some of my compadres in the media seem to think that he won. I'm not quite sure which hymn sheet they're singing from, but, you know, he came across to me as a bit of a nasty character, slightly kind of odious, slightly kind of, I don't know, poisonous maybe, and kind of one-track-minded about a lot of things.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't use those words myself.
I think he did
obviously go on the attack, and I think a lot of people, you know, don't like negative campaigning. I think what people want is sort of a positive, optimistic vision, not attacking the other candidate. But I think the main thing is that on the key issue, Brexit, Boris demonstrated, I think, that his energy, dynamism and optimism have a, you know, what people want to hear, want to see in the next leader, the next prime minister. And I think the audience in the studio, but I think also the public more widely, kind of warmed to that.
And did we get a glimpse of Prime Minister Boris Johnson, albeit that he was very keen to point out that that's not what he was trying to do? But he clearly relishes the limelight. He loves it when people kind of encourage him, laugh at him and kind of cheer him on. He seemed to become more galvanised whenever he felt like the public was on his side, and he kind of went for it part two, part three, part four, which I think will be quite an entertaining way to run the country.
Well, I think, I don't know, but I find personally that when you're talking to an audience and they respond positively, obviously you kind of, you know, draw energy from that and it gives you encouragement. I'm sure he's just the same. And I think, you know, we've seen in our approach to Brexit and more generally over the last two or three years, a kind of steady, safety first kind of approach, which unfortunately hasn't really worked.
No.
And a more energetic, optimistic, dynamic approach, I think, is probably what we now need. And clearly Boris offers that, and hopefully it'll be successful in breaking the impasse that we're currently stuck in.
Yes, quite. And one of the things that was interesting as a side issue last night, there were quite a few little sort of votes going on in Parliament about proroguing Parliament. There was amendments from Dominic Grieve here, there and everywhere. I mean, it kind of went under the radar. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, well, we were debating last night a what should have been quite a technical bill about Northern Ireland, because at the moment the Northern Ireland executive is not sitting because Sinn Féin and the DUP can't agree. So there's effectively direct rule from Westminster also to keep things running on a day-to-day basis while the Stormont Assembly gets back up and running. This bill was basically a technical bill to keep that going a bit longer, but various people tacked on amendments to the bill that did other things. So, for example, Stella Creasy and Conor McGinn tacked on amendments which passed and which I voted for to make same-sex marriage legal in Northern Ireland if there's no assembly in a few weeks, and to make abortion the same in Northern Ireland as it is in the rest of the United Kingdom. So those were passed by big majorities. But Dominic Grieve, as you say, the former Attorney General, also tacked on a couple of amendments, one of which was a sneaky attempt, sort of backdoor attempt, to try and maybe not prevent, but at least make more difficult this idea of prorogation, suspending Parliament. And he did that by saying that every couple of weeks, starting, I think, in early October, the government had to come to Parliament and make some report. And obviously, if Parliament's not sitting, then the government can't make a report to Parliament. So it's sort of a backdoor way of trying to stop or make prorogation more difficult. That amendment passed by one vote. I think from memory, it was 293 in favour, 292 against.
Yes.
I was one of the 292 against. So by a margin of just one vote, it squeaked through. I don't think it's a game changer. It was a rather sneaky thing to do. And as I say, it was designed just to make prorogation just that little bit more difficult.
Yeah, interestingly enough, there's a report on Guido this morning about John Major, who apparently is threatening to go to court to try and stop Boris Johnson from suspending Parliament. Guido claims that John Major himself prorogued Parliament back in 1997 in order to delay the publication of the Cash for Questions scandal. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy out there.
Well, I haven't seen the report yet, and I don't know whether it's true about the 1997 prorogation. But if it is true, it does make...
I must admit, I don't remember that. But then again, I mean, that was, you know, there was a lot going on during that Cash for Questions thing. So it may well be that that kind of slipped under the radar as well. But I mean, like a lot of things, Chris, we find ourselves as the electorate sort of slightly befuddled and bewildered by this raft of kind of legislation that apparently gets made, which is then declared to be apparently meaningless.
What do you mean?
Well, like when things get passed in Parliament and we get told, well, Parliament will not allow for a no-deal Brexit, and then on the other hand we get told, well, actually, Parliament doesn't really get a say in that because the law says, legislation-wise, that actually we can have a no-deal Brexit if we want one. And then we hear stories about, well, you know, we may have members of Parliament voting to stop Boris Johnson from proroguing Parliament, but actually they can't do it. It's very confusing, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, I've only been in Parliament 4 years, and I'm still, you know, understanding all those different things. So there are different kinds of votes in Parliament. Some votes in Parliament are a sort of non-binding expression of opinion.
Yes.
By Parliament. And that vote a few months ago, we voted on a whole range of options. One of them was a no-deal exit, and Parliament voted to say it didn't want a no-deal exit.
Right.
But that is a non-binding expression of opinion.
Right.
The thing that is legally binding and totally watertight is an act of Parliament. So the thing we were debating last night, for example, is an act of Parliament. It becomes the law, and it's illegal to go against it. So you got to, when people say Parliament voted for X or Y, you need to look at it and understand whether it was a non-binding motion or an actual law.
So are you telling me then that what happened last night, which says we can't prorogue Parliament, is binding, and the no-deal Brexit vote, which took place under the meaningful vote system, is not binding?
So the vote last night was an act of Parliament. It is binding, but it didn't say proroguing Parliament will not happen.
Okay.
It said, it wasn't quite as clear as that. It said that the government have to report back every 2 weeks. Now, so it's, you know, it's kind of arguable as to whether prorogation is therefore illegal because you can't report back.
So we still don't really know. Is the bottom line?
I don't think it's that clear. I don't think last night's amendment is that, although it's law, I don't think the meaning of it is particularly clear-cut. No.
OK. So we're looking forward to the voting taking place even as we speak. We've got the next big debate here, actually, at News UK. The Sun and Talk Radio are hosting both Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt, I think, on the 15th. So hopefully we'll see you there. Are you looking forward to a place in Boris Johnson's cabinet, Chris, if things go well?
I think I'll have a place in his cabinet. No, I'm just happy to support him, support the government, and try and get Brexit sorted out and keep our economy going. And I'm not really thinking about any jobs.
OK, good stuff.
Other
Chris,
than the jobs of the British people.
Of course, Chris, thank you very much indeed. Chris Philp, Conservative MP for Croydon South, backing Boris Johnson. He wasn't always backing Boris Johnson, but he is now. And I think he should get a job in the cabinet. He seems to have a pretty good handle on the way the public wishes for the MPs of this land to proceed. But it really is very confusing, isn't it? Nobody knows what the hell's going on.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, I don't know about you, but I'm sick to death of this kind of laudatory, praise that surrounds Sir David Attenborough. He turns up at Glastonbury Festival, declares it to be a plastic-free festival, which it clearly isn't. He gets a huge cheer. He's 93 years old. He's still getting paid a bucket load of money by the BBC, which, of course, is funded by you and I as the TV licence payers. He's doing another TV show at the end of this year, which involves such luminary prospects as us being told that there are apparently 7 continents and there are 5 oceans, which, of course, we knew anyway. He's going to all of them with a plane, with a film crew, expanding his carbon footprint by hundreds and thousands of carbon tonnes, I would assume. Let's talk to Darren Grimes, who's a Brexit campaigner, Conservative commentator as well, because, I mean, Darren, are you as sick of all this as I am?
I am, actually, and I mean, I've been tweeting about it quite angrily this morning.
Yeah.
And I've been accused of being a climate denier.
Well, of course
and
you
I'm
are.
Not Mike, I'm a climate realist.
Yes.
You know, we need to get real about this. Comparisons between plastics and the abolition of slavery. Is he joking?
I know. I mean, it really is. But what I find extraordinary and astonishing is that he gets away with it because he's kind of this sainted character, as if he's always been brilliant all his life, as if, you know, he's stumbled upon a very successful way of making a career and he has become Mr. kind of Blue Planet and all that, and lots of people like what he does. But he's no more of an expert on the climate than you or I.
Well, exactly. And it's the same with the 16-year-old Greta Thunberg. You know, she is held up as sort of Saint Greta, and whatever she says is taken as gospel. But they do not have expertise more than your average bloke on the street. But then I'd also be wary for the reasons that you've mentioned about taking Lord Devon seriously. When, you know, you've mentioned in your report earlier that he's pocketing payments from green businesses to his family firm.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, one of the charities in which he is involved, which has got something to do with the Ocean Conservation Society or something, he's got his son working there as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, you've got to, so look, I reckon climate change is actually happening, but we've got to look at examples where there have been drastic measures taken, like this net zero target that Theresa May, in a desperate attempt to shore up some form of legacy for herself. Denmark, for example, they phased out and had the most radical decarbonisation targets of most major economies around the world.
Right.
And do you know what's happened?
What's happened?
Amount of CO2 produced relative to the value of its imports has massively gone up. Danish heavy industry was simply offshored. So any benefits of getting rid of its carbon and slashing its jobs for Danes around, well, in factories, etc., has gone out the window. So you've got people without jobs for no reason whatsoever.
Mm. And you made a very good point, Darren, in your tweet just before you came on this show to say you were coming on, that we hear all the time from, you know, Remain campaigners that basically nobody voted to make themselves poorer,
exactly.
i.e. when they voted for Brexit. By the same token, as you quite rightly point out, nobody voted to have zero net emissions in the carbon world from 2050 or 2030. When did we ever give that mandate out?
Well, exactly. No one voted for this. You know, I hope the next Prime Minister drops this green virtue signalling, to be honest with you, because the trade-offs of it, of such an asphyxiating target, which it is, because, you know, net zero, that is such a drastic measure. I think we need to have a more sensible conversation about this, to be honest, because I think it's just getting totally mental, all these comparisons. David Attenborough saying that the Industrial Revolution, Britain's to blame. Mike, we're 1% of global CO2
exactly.
emissions.
But also, do you like the way they move the goalposts all the time? Because now that they've worked out that those of us who are not actually buying into this, when we say things like, why don't you go check out what's happening in India? Why don't you go check out what's happening in China? They then say, not only do we have a debt to repay because we started polluting the planet before they did, but they're also, an awful lot of the reasons that China is polluting the planet is because they're making stuff for us. So we should pay for that as well.
Well, exactly. And I don't see how slashing, destroying jobs in this country and livelihoods in this country, or, you know, hiking up the cost of flights for the poorest in society is going to help cut emissions in China and India. How the hell does that work?
Well, exactly. I mean, one of the reasons that India is at the moment so polluting of the world is because more and more people are being taken out of poverty by commerce. They are becoming more wealthy and they are now able to afford air conditioning units, right? Like they are in America. So suddenly there's all these air conditioning units pushing freon into the atmosphere. What are we supposed to do? Tell them to go back to living in poverty.
Well, exactly. And that's exactly, you've hit the nail on the head, because you look at the life expectancy. Before the Industrial Revolution, that was about 30.
Yeah.
There's a reason why David Attenborough has lived such a long and healthy life and he can fly around the globe, hectoring all of us.
It's incredible. What about this John Selwyn Gummer, Lord Debin character, right? Now, this is the same guy, you may not be old enough to remember, who shoved a hamburger in his own daughter's mouth during the CJD mad cow disease outbreak to prove that there was nothing wrong with British beef. Now, this is clearly a man who's not unhappy about sacrificing any member of his family for his political ambitions. This is a bloke who's now telling us that the government is running the climate change scenario like Dad's army, and that we need to make massive changes to our lifestyles in the next 12 months in order to save the planet. It's literally lunacy.
Well, it's all right for people like Lord Devon who can afford to take the hit, but what in his report, he reckons that will be a 1 and 2% taken off our GDP per annum. He's the same bloke who'll argue against Brexit, but doesn't give a damn when it's about climate change and, you know, every time a factory closes because we're ushering in targets that will inevitably close them.
Yeah.
They don't care about that. They don't care about people at the bottom because they'll be able to take the financial hit.
Exactly
right. The hypocrisy I cannot stand, Mike.
Well, that's the point. And he runs something called Sancroft International, right? Now, this is how it describes itself. Sancroft is an international sustainability consultancy. We help some of the world's leading companies improve their environmental, ethical and social impact. You know, so that business that he is in is obviously benefiting from any more and newer climate change kind of legislation. He's the chairman of this organisation. His son, Felix, is a director. director, it would seem, of this organisation. I can't find any kind of financials for them at the moment, so I can't tell you exactly how much money these people are paid. But this is a business, and the climate change business is getting bigger every month.
Of course it is, exactly. And meanwhile, Britain's few remaining manufacturing plants and steelworks are shutting up shop for good, whilst other countries continue to burn fossil fuels at a rate of knots, just to put money in the pockets of these vested interests. I think we need to have a serious rethink of this stuff, because it's totally mental.
Mm. But there isn't anyone, is there, in Parliament who's willing to stand up for you and I, Darren, the people who actually don't buy this? Because even John McDonnell, you know, the world's most unreconstructed Marxist, is now jumping on the bandwagon, saying that they're going to delist from the London Stock Exchange any companies who are not green enough as far as the Labour government is concerned, if they ever get in, and they're going to take them off the Stock Exchange. You know, they're just now appealing to all of these people they think want to save the planet.
Well, it's a new religion. It really is. You know, you kind of touch the stuff. Otherwise, you're a climate denier. You're an ignorant. You must be being paid to say this stuff. But if you look around the world at the data, I mean, the Soviet Union was hardly good with the environment. You know, all of the evidence suggests that it's capitalist economies who actually there is an incentive because the consumer can buy in to things if they want to buy in more green friendly solutions. So it's capitalism that will come up with the solution to climate change. But we're not going to do that by ruining the lot for those at the bottom, the poorest people that the MPs in that gilded chamber in Westminster are supposed to be standing up for. So I think you're absolutely right. There is no one standing up for the people who are likely to lose their jobs and livelihoods because of such drastic measures.
No, quite right. Now, let's have a listen to Sir David Attenborough, because he was at the Climate Change Environmental Committee yesterday, and he said this.
I am sorry that there are people who are in power internationally, notably, of course, the United States, but also in Australia, which is extraordinary, actually, because Australia is already facing having to deal with some of the most extreme manifestations of climate change.
Is he going to come back on?
Nobody thought that human beings could change the climate. And we now know we are. And what is worse, of course, is that we are changing the climate in a way that is irreversible. If the world climate change goes on as it is, we are going to be facing huge problems with immigration. Large parts of Africa will become even less inhabitable than they are now. We cannot be radical enough in dealing with the issues that face us at the moment. I have no idea what the future holds. Okay. I see no future in being pessimistic, because that leads you to say, then to hold it, why should I care? And I believe that way disaster lies. So I feel an obligation. It's the only way you can get up in the morning is to believe that actually we can do something about it.
See, old Attenborough, right, he says, quite frankly and quite clearly there, Darren, he doesn't know what the future holds. He also says, I have to believe that we can do something to change it. So even he's not convinced that whatever we do will make any difference. And that's, I think, where you and I are.
Well, he says there's no point in being pessimistic.
Yes.
Yet he calls for the most drastic solutions that will take us back to an era when we were crawling around in our own dirt. You know, the prescription by these people is that you cannot eat meat, you cannot fly, you cannot drive your car, but you can if you're wealthy enough to afford it. And if you look, you mentioned the elections in Australia.
Mm.
The reason why the Liberal Party in Australia did so well was because the Labour Party was pandering to all of these green lobbies, and people were worried about losing the jobs. Look at Paris. You've got the Gilets Jaunes protesting en masse because of this diesel tax that would hit the poorest in society. There are solutions out there. We need to invest in the technology and give incentives, tax breaks to those who are coming up with the solutions to tackle climate change. But we don't tackle it by making people lose their jobs and livelihoods. This is madness.
It really is. But what are we going to do, Darren? Because, you know, we've got the Green Party making inroads into various places like the European Union. The European Union is about as green as my Jaguar, to be honest, but then they still tell everybody else that they have to be very, very much greener. You know, we're being told by our own government that we have to cut back. We've got a mayor in London who's trying to make it impossible for anybody to go anywhere on anything but a bicycle.
Exactly.
And you can't burn any wood because that apparently is going to damage everything. You know, we have somehow allowed this to happen, haven't we?
We need to talk about the evidence. You've mentioned diesel. Diesel fuel might emit less CO2, but we now know that it produces considerably more toxic gases than petrol. And then you mentioned as well, we were burning palm oil for biofuel. All of these things that we were told were renewable solutions. So the evidence is there that when we act too hastily, we make the wrong decisions, and it hurts people harder than it would have done had we actually took the time to look at the evidence and work things out. So people like me and you just need to make the case that the government's waved this through without any democratic mandate, and that will be the surest way to lose public support for climate policy. So let's take a step back, let's actually look at the evidence, and let's come up with a sensible solution,
yes,
one that doesn't hit the poorest in this country hardest.
I absolutely could not agree with you more. Darren, great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot more in the future. Darren Grimes, clearly a fellow traveller of mine. Judging by your reaction on Twitter, by the way, to a tweet that I put out last night, many, many more of you are on my side on this than they are on Sir David Attenborough's side. Sir David Attenborough is not a climate change expert. I'm not claiming to be one either, but what I am claiming to be is someone who doesn't trust politicians who want to rinse us for more money on the basis that they claim it's going to save the planet. Well, it's not going to save the planet. The planet isn't dying. There is no emergency. Everything's going to be just fine, honestly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. The resignation alarm went off a little bit earlier on because Sir Kim Darroch has now resigned as UK ambassador to the United States of America. What we now have to wait and see is whether or not Boris Johnson, or whoever is the next prime minister, which is probably Boris Johnson, gets to decide who gets to be the next ambassador to the United States of America. Is it in fact going to be Theresa May, or will she wait until the new appointee is sitting firm in Downing Street? I would bet you my bottom dollar that Boris Johnson will argue very, very strongly that it should be him. Now, of course, what you might want to ask then is whether or not the next ambassador to the United States of America will in fact have gone to Eton, because there's a big campaign on the go called Abolish Eton. And we're going to speak now to Holly Rigby, one of the Abolish Eton campaign coordinators, because she would like to abolish Eton, I presume. Holly, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon.
It's not just Eton, is it? You want to abolish? But surely, because I'm actually going to agree with you, but probably for different reasons. I want to abolish all private schools in this country, because I've always thought that they skew society in such a way and make a difference between rich people and poor people, or just even rich people and average people, and they don't serve any useful purpose other than to sort of separate us.
Yeah, well, we would absolutely agree with that. And our campaign is actually called Labour Against Private Schools.
Right.
And we're using the Twitter handle Abolish Eton, partly because we've kind of been spurred into action by the fact that Boris Johnson is about to become the 20th British Prime Minister who was educated at Eton. But we do think that there is absolutely a broader point to make about the way that kind of elites reproduce themselves through our school system at the moment.
I mean, it's probably fair to say that a lot of those Eton-educated prime ministers were quite a long time ago, weren't they? Because not every prime minister in recent times has come from there.
Well, I mean, Boris Johnson is now going to be the second in 4 years because we had David Cameron a very brief time ago. So I would say that this is still very, very much a live issue. And actually, let's look at the Tory leadership contest. You've got Boris Johnson from Eton versus Jeremy Hunt at Charterhouse. And then look at the Brexit Party, and you've got Nigel Farage, who claims to be, you know, man of the people, was educated at a very posh private school in South London. So actually, I think it is really important still, at the moment.
You see, this is where I differ from you, because I wouldn't go after people just because they've been educated at these very posh schools, because it's not their fault they got sent to posh schools. They probably didn't get asked about it when they were, you know, 10 years of age or 7 years of age when they went to prep school and all of that. And is there not a danger, if you're coming at it from that perspective, that you're going to be labelled just sort of nasty people on the left side of politics who don't like people on the right?
Well, no. What I would say is that actually, in some ways, you're right. Obviously, you don't get to choose what school you go to. But what's important is that what political choices that you make once you're in a position of power. And Boris Johnson or Jeremy Hunt have been part of a Conservative government for the last however many years. Well, they've been in government for the last 9 years, and they have been cutting state secondary schools like mine to the absolute bone, cutting funding, cutting teachers, and we are now struggling even to keep a basic level of education going for the children that I teach in my state school in Inner London. So they don't seem to be showing that they have any interest whatsoever in the children of majority of people who go to state schools in this country, and they also clearly still very much support the continued existence of their own schools. So, you know, I think that it's up to what you do when you're in a position of power, and they've shown that they are still very committed to this sort of reproduction of privilege, I think.
Yes, no, I think that's absolutely right. However, how do you go about changing it, though? Because it is something which is kind of goes back to as long ago as the days of empire in this country, and presumably one of the reasons that these private schools started up was because they were supposed to be for people who were posted abroad. That was the original idea of it, wasn't it? And they were called public schools because, in fact, they were not religiously based in particular. And they've also become magnets now for people from foreign countries. I mean, most of, if not 50% of the people at Eton now have got parents who live abroad.
Well, actually, the reason that Eton was established and some of these bigger kind of older schools is that actually they were charitable institutions that had money allocated to them to educate poor boys. That's why they were set up. They were set up to educate kind of bright and talented poor boys in the local area. And actually, that they have moved so far from that now that nobody could claim that they were a charity anymore. I think that there is only 1% of students at Eton are on 100% scholarship. So we would say, well, you know, first thing we would do, absolutely, remove the charity status. I don't think anybody anywhere can think that these schools are any longer a charity, which means that they would have to pay business rates. You know, at the moment, private schools don't pay any business rates at all.
Which is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, how do they justify? I mean, how does the Charities Commission even justify calling them charities?
Well, it's because they say, well, we give bursaries or we lend our playing fields out and things like that. But what we say with the Labour Against Private Schools campaign is actually we don't just want the crumbs off your table. Actually, we need a radical redistribution of the historic endowments that were supposed to be for poor children and now are not used effectively, and that the kind of vast, luxurious properties and that these schools these schools are based in actually should be for the use of the many in this country who deserve to have access to them.
And don't you also think that society would benefit massively? This is kind of more where I'm coming from on this argument. If everybody had to go to the same school, if there, you know, I would be more than happy for there to be selection, and I'd be more than happy for there to be grammar schools and to go back to a system where you stream kids. I don't mind doing that, but what I think is much better is for people from all walks of life, from all different areas of income, to mix together, because otherwise you end up ghettoising people in both rich and poor areas, and it's nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you see that in our society today. I don't think that anybody who is currently running the country really has any sense of what it is like to live here. I mean, Boris Johnson was asked what the national minimum wage was, and he had no idea. When has he ever interacted with someone on minimum wage unless they're staff that he's ordering around? And actually, when you have a comprehensive school system where children of all different ages and faiths and nationalities mixed together, we know that that makes a more cohesive society. The only other thing I would say is that we are quite clear that we are against elitism, hierarchy and selection in all its forms. We don't think that you should separate children by ability either, because actually we know from research that children learn better together when they are in mixed ability groups, and that fosters social cohesion also.
Well, maybe. That's an arguable point, which we haven't got time to get into. What about Jeremy Corbyn? Is he backing your campaign? Because he went to quite a good school, didn't he?
Well, he went to a private primary school, and then he went to a state school for secondary.
He went to a grammar school, though, didn't he? Shropshire. I thought he went to a grammar school in Shropshire.
Well, what I do know about Jeremy Corbyn is that he actually got divorced over the issue of whether to send his son to a grammar school. He was so adamant that he didn't want his son to go to a grammar school that he apparently is one of the reasons why he got divorced. So we know.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it? So because I can't agree on where to send you as my child, I'll just leave your mother. Great.
Well, I mean, I don't know on whose side they felt more strongly about it. What I do know about Jeremy is that he is 100% and totally committed to comprehensive schooling. He's always been a brilliant champion of comprehensive schooling. He spoke recently at a big meeting in London about why we need more funding in our schools. So I know that he is committed to this, and we certainly hope, and we will certainly be trying at some point to talk with Jeremy and sitting down with him, and also with Angela Rayner, of course, who is the Shadow Education Secretary. Yeah. And yes, we very much hope they'll back the campaign.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that happens at conference, happily. We shall see you there, hopefully, if all goes well. Thanks very much indeed. That's Holly Rigby, one of the Abolish Eton campaign coordinators. She's also a state secondary school teacher. I take her point, and I know that she's very passionate about it. I just worry slightly that this is not so much about abolishing private schools and making everybody equal. It's more about punishing the rich, and that for me is never a good reason to do anything.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Oh, 03444991000. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Not an awful lot of time to take all your calls, but we will get as many in as we can do. We're going to go straight away to David, who's in Milton Keynes, wants to talk about private schools. David, very good afternoon to you.
Afternoon. Thanks for having us on.
No, Mike. Not at all. What do you want to tell us?
The last caller, or the caller before that, who was, wants to abolish private schools.
Yeah.
I think people need to look at the bigger picture, because, I mean, when you say words like elitism and the super rich and things like that, I'm a plumber by trade.
Okay.
Not on a very big salary. My wife's a travel agent, not on a very big salary. And we've had to sacrifice everything, including my BT Sports, which I'm really upset about.
Okay.
So we can send our child to private school, which is going to start in September. Now, the reason that we're sending him there is because the local schools near us are just simply too dangerous to go to.
Okay.
The education level is not up to standard. Some of the kids that I meet nowadays, they can't read or write properly because the funding, like what you mentioned, the funding is not actually going towards the schools that it should be. Now, I'd love my kids to go to a state school. But they also mentioned about the diversity as well. When I went into a induction day, all the parents inside that room, that was the most diverse room I've probably ever been in this country.
Okay.
I think people need to get off the elitism, because there's a lot of parents out there that I think are sacrificing a lot to put their child.
Listen, I totally get where you're coming from, David. Is it secondary school you're sending your son to?
No, it's he starts reception, so he's going to be four.
So this is a primary school?
Yeah.
So you're telling me the primary school that is your local primary school in Milton Keynes is not safe?
No, I don't think they are.
Really? That's astonishing, isn't it? I mean, that's the problem, though. I mean, I totally respect your right to do it, and I would never argue that you shouldn't have the right to do it while the schools are there. I just happen to believe that as long as we have private schools in this country, the state schools will never be as good as they should be and could be. Because if we didn't have private schools, I just think that everybody would have to go to the same school, and that way the parents who really care, like you, would be putting their kids into a state school and would be raising the level of competence of the teachers. You would be asking for much more from them than maybe they get asked at the moment. And parents like yourself would be in the system and therefore the system would improve?
The state schools, they argue that they are on level playing field with the private schools. That's what they say. They say that they can educate your child just as much as a private school can. And when they come out with comments like that, politicians are going to go, okay, well, that's fine. Yeah. You're okay.
Right.
No, actually, we're not. We need the funding, you know. So they need to admit to themselves that they need help, more help than what they're actually...
Well, just on funding and on numbers alone, your kid will have a smaller classroom, more attention, more personal involvement and relationship funding than anything else than you would ever get in a state school. You know, I suppose maybe I'm just a little bit in cloud cuckoo land here, which I don't mind admitting, because obviously people like yourself are up and down the country and you are probably keeping the private schools going much more than the very elite people are in Eton, you know. But you're going to be spending an awful lot of your money in the next, you know, 10, 15 years then on education for your son.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and which I'm really upset about.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
And you shouldn't have to, David. That's my point, I guess. I suppose my point would also be, we're all paying into the tax system. We all get taxed. We all pay quite a lot of tax into a system, and we are entitled to expect the education system run by the state to be fit for purpose. And if it's not, that's not right.
Yeah, and I think everyone can agree that not every school is up to scratch. Not every state school is up to scratch.
No, I think that's absolutely right. Some are.
And I bet there are state schools out there that are better than private educated schools, but, you know, it's a catchment area. I mean, the school system, I mean, I go to people's houses and it, you know, in the morning and I have to work round the school run. And the school runs are taking up to an hour because you've got children who are 1 year apart from each other going to different schools.
Yeah.
Because of some sort of catchment area, and that must be difficult on a parent. You start work at 9 o'clock, you get your kids to school at 8:30. What one do you drop off
first? Exactly. No, I mean we've had that. I've had that problem where we had to end up having one kid going with somebody else's parents because that was the only way it could work. You had two different kids going to two different schools. But it's a great call, David. You are basically the kind of person that the state school should be attracting, but which the state school is abandoning instead. And David's having to spend a far bigger portion of his income and his wife's income than he should to have to pay double, effectively, tax and extra money for an education. It's shocking. Michael is in Derbyshire. Hello, Michael.
Oh, hi, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. You're a former headmaster.
Absolutely. And let me tell you something. Holly Rigby doesn't know what she is talking about. I'm a working-class boy, but became a headmaster of an independent school.
Right.
This girl that you've just been speaking to, who effectively wants to abolish these outstandingly brilliant schools, there's no question about that. Forget about elitism. And in any event, what is wrong with being elite? If you have potential, you should make sure that you're going to be in an environment to achieve that potential. There is so much claptrap talked about the independent sector. I've taught in both the maintained sector, which is state schools, and the independent sector. There are some appalling teachers in the state system. And I have to tell you, many parents, there's only 7% of people go to an independent sector. Many of those parents make tremendous financial sacrifices to give their children the very best chance in life.
Mm.
They are not all millionaires. They are not all wealthy. They are ordinary people who obviously prize education and want to give their children the best possible. Holly Rigby hasn't got a clue. She's politically motivated, and she wants to destroy something which we should all in this country be outstandingly proud of.
Sure.
Because most of these institutions, Mike, and I should say I agree normally with you 8% of your philosophy on life and your debates about everything you mentioned on your programme, I agree 80% of what you say. But on this subject, this woman hasn't got a clue.
Okay. Well, let me just put one thing to you, Michael, and I'm very happy that you agree with most of what I say, but I like it that you disagree with me on some things, because that's what we want to do here. But wouldn't it be better, and I know it may sound a bit fantastical and maybe a bit sort of imaginary, if we could have a state school system only, so that the state school system was fit for purpose, so that all of the people who... Because I believe that if the parents care enough, the school gets better. And you'll know that from the private sector. But if we had a state school system which was fit for purpose and where everybody had to go because there was no private private education, would that not be better?
Of course it would. And I agree with you 100% that I did agree with, you know, the criminal Tony Blair, much of what he said. But when he said education, education, yes, of course. Of course we should have the finest education system in the world. But sadly, we are never going to achieve that. That is utopia. It is, I'm afraid, a fiction unless you can persuade politicians to, A, weed out the appalling teachers that, for some strange reason, managed to get qualified. It's not really a profession. You know, it's the easiest profession to get into is the teaching profession, when it should be the hardest because they are looking after the most precious thing we have, our young people. And I have to tell you, Holly Rigby sounded to me like someone she's ill-educated herself. She is politically biased and she wants to destroy something that she knows nothing about whatsoever. Otherwise, she wouldn't be spouting such nonsense.
Well, it's very well put, Michael. I can't find myself disagreeing with much of it, to be honest. I think she is, of course, politically motivated because all she wants to do is go after the Eton boys. Let's talk to James in Pinner, who wants to talk about climate change. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. What do you want to say, James?
I'm fine. I wanted to just come back to the climate change agenda and just basically say, a few years ago, I was actually working in Europe, within the European Union, in the energy industry, which is my speciality.
Right.
And one of the deals that was done at the time was that Theresa May signed the strike price agreement on behalf of the British government to bring Hinkley Point online, which is obviously the French EDF facility. She signed a deal which would supply electricity at a guaranteed price of $92.50 per megawatt hour, when the current price equivalent is less than $40.
Uh-huh.
So she's already signed a deal which is going to give us more than 100% increase in our price of electricity. And I think this little tryst that she's played in the last couple of weeks, she's really trying to create the burning bridge to support what she's already done.
Right.
But there's a second point I want to just make to it, because I don't think people really pick this up if you sort of pull the curtain back to see the wizard on this. In Europe in particular, you've got this thing that they call sort of comparative advantage, where different countries, and the European Union orchestrate this, different countries have their specialisms. And the two specialisms in energy, obviously you've got Germany specialising in renewables and France specialising in nuclear.
Yeah.
And so they are basically taking that forward. There's others that do it, obviously, outside the EU, America, Japan in particular. But what's going on is that the whole thing is being carved up and being taken on a global agenda. And behind that, you've got, you know, because that's creating an industry for us. And then in the city, you've got big pension funds that are invested into these funds that are just purely focused on renewable energies and things like that.
Right.
The whole structure behind it is on a global basis and touches everywhere, because everyone sees this as going to be the moneymaker over the next 50 years. So
we're all plugged into this renewable nonsense, basically.
Well, we are. And they go, you know, I mean, you're probably a bit like me. You know, I looked at the NASA curve that they all refer to and go, look, this is what it's been doing over the last 150 years. And I looked at it more carefully and I went, hold on a minute. It flatlines between 1940 and 1980. And if you're talking about, you know, that period, which is probably one of the most industrializing periods that we've had in the West, why would it be flatlining? If you think it's all down to, you know, the big spike is man-made contribution.
Yeah.
Just doesn't stack up.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. Well, listen, James, we're returning to this theme. Thank you very much for your call and for your expertise, because it's been a fascinating show this morning. And, of course, we even got to play out the resignation alarm. So Kim Darroch, no longer the US ambassador from the United Kingdom. We'll see if we can pick a better one coming up tomorrow from 10 o'clock right here on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.